Hello and welcome to the EDH Reccast EDH Rec Room, where we just talk about whatever we want to talk about. So this is unlike the normal podcast. This is a bit more on the casual side of the discussion. I am joined, of course, by Matt and Dana. Matt, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. I just want to give a big thanks for nothing to whoever invented the number zero.
Thanks for nothing. Okay, so even in the rec rooms, you're going to be doing dad jokes? That's amazing.
I'm always going to do whatever I can to just slip those dad jokes in, but yes.
That's hilarious. I was not prepared for that. And I'm also joined, of course, by Dana. Dana, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. I can't make the joke I made last time when we tried to do this show and had to can it because the audio didn't take because I referenced that last Secret Lair as Secret Lair Garbage Pail Kids, but that's like a month old now at this point, so
it's true. Time has no meaning.
It's a boomer joke, so I'm just gonna say hi.
Hi, Dana. That's a long form version of the word hi, but I totally love it. And that is right. We are re-recording this rec room. We did it one time before. The audio turned out it didn't work, but we do want to talk about this because what are we talking about today? We're talking about power levels, the power level discussions that people have before the games begin to make sure that everyone's playing roughly at the same power level. So we just wanted to get some thoughts in about that because we are fresh off of the Command Fest online. And we had some experiences there that maybe inform our feelings, or we have some feelings that inform our experience and yada yada. So I don't know, that's just what we're going to be talking about right now.
Well, let's get into it.
I would say so we're talking about the 10 scale that was on the channel Fireball is using for their events. So the jumping off point here is the command zone guide that channel Fireball used their events for rating the power of the deck you're playing in. I'll just quickly go over it. It's 1-2 for the fun of it. That's you're more interested in theme than efficiency or winning. 3-4 casual, you're trying to win but with limited resources. 5-6 focused, where you have powerful cards but few or no infinite or game-ending combos. 7-8 is optimized, lots of infinite and game-ending combos and many powerful cards, but some of the cards are not from the highest tier of commander cards. And 9-10 competitive, which is decks pushed to the absolute limit and only the highest tier of commanders and cards used. So that's the scale everyone kind of used at the event and that we've seen people more or less be using in most places. So this is what we wanted to talk about. First of all, what issues, if any, do you guys have with the scale?
Well, how much time do you have is my question.
And so that's just it. Like, as soon as this starts, we're going to start off. It'll sound like we're on a hugely negative foot here. And I want to make sure that we like keep it. We're not just going to complain about the power scale. Like, that is super not the mission here. But yeah, I do think that as a form of trying to get folks to equalize their decks together, I think that there are a lot of deficiencies that the scale presents. Some of it comes with where I think certain power levels are classified, and most of it, for me at least, comes with how things are classified. And not even like which sections go where, but just the fact that there is both a nominal and an ordinal scale going on here really feels like it's affecting our ability to have these discussions a little bit too much past the point where it is an effective discussion. And so that's kind of my grind with it.
Well, and I, to its credit, and like you said, Joey, we don't want to be too negative. So the old scale that people used to use just 1-10, and people would just assume, you know, 5 is pre-con level. I think as a community, we are well beyond 5 being average on the scale. That is the midpoint. Having that be pre-con level decks, because as we're going to discuss, not many people are playing pre-con level or below even. So having a 5 kind of in the old paradigm representing a pre-con level deck, that was the issue. And this kind of takes care of it a little bit, saying that 3 and 4s, those are the casual decks, and using the example of recent pre-cons, but also taking away just the strict number and giving categories to it. That is a great improvement in my mind because it gave a little bit more context other than just saying, oh, what's your power level 1-10? You're like, because if you're a newer player, you don't know what you're basing it against. So getting just any more information and context to kind of stack it up to, that helps immensely, especially with people who might be a little more new to the format. So it's better than what we had just with throw out a number and people would go with that. Is there room for improvement? Absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess like I'm also totally on board with there. I love the context that the categories give. My umbrage here is that the numbers prevent us from getting as far as we should with it. But also I can hear Dana's brain breaking right now because I know that he's gotten some of the numbers here too, especially on the lower tier.
I have an issue. Well, and I like the idea of removing the numbers and just going with the categories for all kinds of reasons, including psychological, that people don't want to call their deck a particular number.
That's just no one volunteers that their deck is a one. Like, that's one of my main things. Like, when you have an ordinal scale that is ranked this way, it implies that, like, it's supposed to be going upwards or something like that. And that's not necessarily true for Commander. There are plenty of us who tune decks downwards. So, like, having number, but I'm getting ahead of it. I'm sorry. I'm completely interrupting you as I am wont to do. So, go right ahead. I'm sorry.
And I think that's a good point. But I think the bigger issue probably is I just don't think 1 to 2, 3 to 4, I don't think that's actually a bracket. That's just one number. Like, there's one cluster of decks that all play in there and play together. The difference between the pre-con and a, you know, 1 to 2 for the fun of it theme based deck is just non-existent. And I think number one, because the power level is just so, like, to build a deck whose power level is that much lower than a pre-con, I just don't know if you could do that really intentionally unless you're doing something crazy to make it a one, unless you're, like, on a dare. And there's not enough decks. I don't think anyone is sitting around with their deck that's a one, the famous Ladies Looking Left deck. And I don't think they're turning down games with pre-cons because they're hoping somebody else walks in with their Autumn Willow Farmer's Market themed deck. That's just like, no one's ever going to come in. You're going to be there all day. You have to pick and choose, and you're going to wind up playing against pre-con decks anyway. That's just one category of deck. We don't need four breakdowns for what is essentially a rounding error amount of decks that are playing at that power level that aren't really easy to tell apart in terms of strength anyway.
So, and it's not just perception here. Like, there have been some numbers actually put out that I would say completely confirm what you're talking about here. Channel Fireball for the first Command Fest published the where most of the population fell within the different power ranking in their pods. And then also it looks like Spell Table has a spell bot that also published a second version of that after the second Command Fest. And I'll throw these images up here on the screen. Like, they really bear out exactly what you are talking about. There were over 600 pods for both Command Fests. In the first one, the 1 to 2 category, the for the fun of it category, there were only 2% of games that landed within that frame. In the 3 to 4, it was like 10% of games. In the 5 to 6, it was like 56% of games. In the 7 to 8 power level range, the optimized power level range, that was about 24%. And then in the 9 to 10, the competitive, that was about 8%. So yeah, once again, in the lowest bracket, the 1 to 2, 2% were there. And that gets even more extreme with the data that we find for the second power level one for the second Command Fest, because the 1 and the 2 don't even exist on this one. In this image, there isn't even that. And the 3, I think, is like marginally at a 1%. It looks
a sliver like, at best.
Yeah. It could still be a 0. Like, it's not too granular on this particular graph that they've put out. So it's hard to get an exact number for it, but it is still like, this is a very similar curve here that we're seeing. The 3 is like maybe a 0.something%. In the 4 range, they had about 4% of games. In the 5, it was maybe 5 or 6% of games landed there. And then when you get to the 6 and the 7, things skyrocket. In the 6, you got 47%. In the 7, you got like probably 31-32%. And then in the 8 power level range, you've got 7%. In the 9, you've got 3%. In the 10, you've got 2%. So like, this is a very extreme bell curve. Like, it is it's a normal distribution for this bell curve, but in both of these situations, it is so extremely condensed within the center that, like you said, Dana, it's practically a rounding error to have a category for 1 and 2 as below a pre-con power level, because that's just not really a thing that we practically see out in the wild.
Well, and that's my biggest issue with giving, and this isn't to say that those extreme theme decks, the 1s and 2s, shouldn't be represented, but looking at the actual data, seeing the 1s and 2s combined with the 9s and 10s, combined at this previous Command Fest, they occupied less than 10% of the games, yet they're taking up 40%, 4 of the 10 data points
right
on the power scale. And I think we should maybe move those. So, you know, you have the pre-con and below level decks. Maybe those become the new ones and twos. And then we just relegate the hyper-competitive decks to just a 10. And then that gives those sixes more space to break up, because we're seeing almost half of the games that were played went into that six category. And I'm sure not all of them were the same type of sixes. So right. Being able to lower that bell curve a little bit and evenly distribute those power levels, that's one thing I would love to see. And just getting a more accurate representation, because when you have a lot of those, like one, two, and three barely existed, nines and tens a little bit more, but also not a lot of games are being done there. So how can we, as a community, find a better way that's going to give the average deck more room to express itself? And so people will be able to find better games and more equally powered games in the future.
I mean, my suggestion to the path of least resistance that'll be the least amount of work, if we're going to accept this as the baseline scale we're going with, will be to just erase the numbers off it entirely and erase the description for one and two. And that will leave us with a category called casual, trying to win but with limited resources, a category called focused, a category called optimized, and a category called competitive. I think that's a rough breakdown of what we see in the wild anyway.
I frankly, yeah, like I again will come back to, I think the numbers completely, like they bias our, like you mentioned, the psychology of how we want to engage with this, because sometimes we will, even unintentionally, will understate the power of our deck or will overstate the power of our deck. And mm-hmm. it's very difficult. Like once you have numbers in there too, this is another conversation that is kind of shaped by people's knowledge of the game, where something yeah. that is just a named category isn't necessarily, like when you say competitive or optimized or casual, those are things that your brain can kind of grok onto that will probably give you a better description of what's happening within the game compared to, well, what is a 10 supposed to be? What is an 8 supposed to be? Which is sort of, to have a conversation with a newer player about what a 10 is supposed to be is going to be different than if I have a conversation with a person who's been playing for a very long time and who understands the competitive thresholds of the EDH format. Like I'll have two very different perceptions among those two people about what a 7 is supposed to be. And so that's another reason why I just like, oh man, I keep coming back to the numbers, but I just don't like that this is a nominal and an ordinal scale, because they don't need to be ranked that way. The numbers get in the way and they bias our psychology, and I don't like it. I will amend something that you said earlier, Dana, like having the casual, the focus, the optimized, the competitive, that could be good. But do you think there's also room for like a, you know, you mentioned the ladies looking left or something, like should there be a category for theme decks too? Or
and I think they're playing, I think that's roughly playing at the same power level as the casual / recent pre-con descriptor. I think even if we gave that type of deck its own category, there wouldn't be enough people playing at it to get a game anyway.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think those people would probably identify their decks as casual anyways, because when you say theme, that doesn't have anything regarding like how powerful it is. Because like my Ukiman Khazr deck, for example, that's +1/+1 counter theme. And I think if I sat down with the typical ladies looking left deck, I don't think there would be a very good sure. power level, like even ground when yeah. it comes to that. So I think just saying theme, that is a little ambiguous. I think having something to do with the way the deck is constructed, like Dana said, the casual, focused, optimized, and competitive. I think if those were the four categories that we used, I think that six category that we're seeing on the graph of how many games were played, a lot of those sixes might have shifted down because people, like you said, Joey, they want to oversell or undersell. So they feel bad. You know, maybe they know their deck is a pre-con plus level deck, but they feel bad saying it's a 4, so they want to add a few points to it. I think if you just say casual, you know, this is what it is, and give the descriptor, that might encourage people and take away some of the negative stigma. What do you guys think about, you know, if that was the power scale that was used, do you think the numbers would be a little more evenly distributed from this past event?
I really do. And for the record, like, I think that this ought to be a bell curve. Like, I do believe that the majority of Commander players consolidate within a certain area, but this is such an extreme bell curve that we saw with the data that was published here, that it just feels like it's not really serving our ability to find the different types of games. And there's a lot more nuance to what's happening within the 6 and 7 power. Like, cause like right now, like 79% of the games are happening in the 6 to 7 power range. And that just feels like, no, there's a lot more complexity happening in there. That this isn't maybe serving as well. So I would totally love to see it stretched out a little bit more. Maybe there can be a fifth category. Maybe it can be better described than what I vaguely came up with. I do think that these are great words for it. And the other thing that we really need to express here is that it does have to be simple. Like, this is a program, a system mm-hmm. that we want thousands of players to be able to use to, you know, to be able to find evenly matched games that will be resonant and enjoyable for the entire table. Everyone's looking to get the same thing out of that game. So it does have to be a really easy method of communication. I just, you know, this first attempt at it, which is sort of how I view it, like, this was something to try, and I feel like it's not working, and I'm hoping that a discussion like this can help rev it into something new a little bit and give it a little bit of space to breathe and reform into something that might be a little bit better.
I think you said the exact same thing I was thinking about. A lot of the substitutes people have proposed and come up with, they are overcomplicated. They're overthinking this, and it's got to be something very simple that you can go to a Command Fest and, you know, you sit down next to a middle schooler who's at his first event. You know, if little Johnny or little Sally, you know, they don't know much about the game, you need to be able to have something that they can easily grasp, just as much as you have the Command Zone guys and the EDH Reccast guys. We're all going to be on the same page. And I think that's something when people are proposing all these different, you know, oh, it's a 3.7 on this scale and a 4 on the power and the intent. And like, I think it's got to be simple. And that's the biggest fault in so many other alternatives I've seen.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you need to keep it simple and clean, and you also need to have the categories have enough people willing to say they belong to that category to actually find a group.
Right.
Yeah, you have to take away that negative stigma of it, like, encourage people to want to find the appropriate home.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that there is actually a negative stigma attached to numbers like 1 and 2. So maybe that's one of my one of the things here that's stuck in my head. I think that we've kind of made our thoughts clear about this. We don't like the numbers. We would love to see it, you know, more described as certain categories to help people have that. But like, even when you go to a game, like, let's move now to a quick discussion about this too. Like, even once you sit down in one of these categories, you're still going to have a conversation. Like, any ranking system or whatever like this is not an excuse to not have the rest of the conversation. You do still have to have a, not a rule zero conversation, but a pregame discussion about how to equally match power levels. So real quick, before we take off, like, maybe let's quickly talk about techniques or thoughts that we have about how to have that actual conversation with other players once you do sit down in a table.
Well, for me, the biggest thing that these conversations have to be is they have to be honest. You cannot misrepresent or intentionally mislead people when you're having that power level discussion. You have to start off and maybe even tell people a little bit about the deck. Don't give away trade secrets, but just say, hey, you know, I'm playing this deck and it kind of does this thing, or, it, you know, oh, I wanted to play a fun Bog Brew Witch Tribal. And that'll give people kind of an idea of, you know, okay, the power level actually is what they're saying. Unfortunately, like, that doesn't always happen. You know, if somebody misrepresents their decks, like, those are going to lead to negative experiences. And that's kind of where a lot of the feel bads that people remember happen is when those conversations aren't honest.
Yeah, I think that hits a nail on the head for sure. For me, the main bullet points I kind of want to hit is I want to warn people in advance of any possible, what I would call, red flag. I think three things that generally can bump on people and make them unhappy with a game are a ton of counterspells, mass land destruction, and stacks. I don't really play any of those things, but like, if my deck has the appearance of possibly doing one of those things, I like to at least give people a heads up that that's not what's happening. I have a Talran deck. There's definitely Talran variants that are running 30 counterspells. I like to give people a heads up ahead of time that it's not that Talran deck, just because it can be a bad time if you play against a tower deck and it is that deck and you're not in the mood for it. So like right. that's, those are some red flags I like to warn people about. Even though I'm not doing them, I like to like make it clear that I'm not. And I also tend to warn people about like really splashy and or expensive cards that might pop up in a deck, particularly in a lower power level. I just built a Adelaide's deck that's actually wound up being pretty decent.
It's crazy cool.
But it has a volcanic island in it too. And like it's the volcanic island probably is not what you would expect in a deck that plays the rest of the cards in that deck.
Yeah. So if like I sit down combat tricks and stuff like that, it's just right. not the kind of thing that I would usually associate with being powerful, but you make it really fun to see. And it does feel weird to see draft chaff commons also alongside beta duels or whatever.
Right.
So I get that.
So,
yeah.
So I also don't want to create that sense of tension immediately when I like say, okay, we're playing at a 6 power level and I flip over that turn 1 volcanic island or something. I like to like warn people it's going to be coming because the rest of the deck isn't going to be what you'd expect to see from a deck containing a volcanic island.
Dana, I've had the exact same problem. I remember when my Moldrotha deck was +1/+1 counters before it became Ukima and Khazar. And I told people, you know, I know it's Moldrotha. It's +1/+1 counters. I don't have a good other commander for it. And I drew my opening hand and I played a turn 1 Underground Sea, but then I played a turn 1 Implement of Ferocity, which is such a commander staple.
What is that?
It was the most expensive land followed by like a 2-cent card.
Right.
And so like you said, Dana, like giving people some forewarning of like, yes, like I do have some fancy cards in here. But making sure that your first few turns kind of reassure people that you are actually like sticking to your word. Because if you tell people this is a 4 power level, but then you open up with Mana Crypt, there's people that are going to raise a side eye.
Right. That's what I'm like. The difference that you guys have here is that like y'all have been playing this game for like 96 years. So you've got the dual lands, but that's
94. I'm not that old.
But, like that's a very fundamentally different thing than someone like having a Mana Crypt in the deck. Like no, putting a Mana Crypt into a precon does not make it a suddenly super powerful precon. But at the same time, if you say that your deck is at a casual power level and you play a Mana Crypt, I will raise my eyebrows a little bit compared to you guys having a mana base of dual lands or something. Like there's a difference between that type of level of card. Like there are some things, I don't know, some cards that when you offer up like, hey, this isn't that type of deck, and then you play a Mana Crypt, there are certain cards in that tier of category that I'll be like, okay, I don't know that this is necessarily where you think it is, I should probably digress at this point. And earlier, Matt, you said something that like you said, don't give away any trade secrets necessarily. Like you don't have to do that as part of the discussion. But man, I really will. Like I am fine giving away like, hey, here's what my deck does. A thing that I think is kind of fun is to like ask, hey, what's the most powerful card in your deck? Or I'll offer up what I think the most powerful card in my deck is or something like that. And I'm perfectly fine saying, you know, this is a thing that my Conrad deck likes to do. This is a thing that it can do. I'm fine giving away the trade secrets, I think, because I would so much rather have like the 5-minute conversation before the game that gives away too much info, even if that costs me an edge or whatever, if that will then lead to an hour-long game that's really, really fun. Like I'd so much rather have that quick discussion there, even if I've given some game away. Like obviously when you're in the super competitive stuff, you're not going to give anything away, but at the same time, like I will give away information if it means that we're going to have a better time. I'm fine with tossing out the trade secrets out.
Well, and maybe I should clarify then kind of what I meant by that is like you don't have to give away like your exact win conditions and like, oh, I'm playing this specific combo. Like when I describe my Miri deck to people who haven't played against it, I tell them this is, you know, my favorite color combination, and I'm just playing cards that make me feel things. Like Rishkar's Expertise is my favorite card in the deck because it's just my favorite card probably ever. I will give away like kind of why I'm playing the deck or an aerial view. But for a lot of people, like you said, they're afraid, like if they give away a single card, like if I tell you Sol Ring is in this deck, I'm losing percentage points.
Right.
That is not the case. And so I guess kind of more what I should have described it as is you don't have to give away like your entire deck list. You don't have to tell people exactly how you win, but giving some people just a good idea of what to expect even, that isn't going to cost you anything. And like you said, Joey, giving people the respect of, I'm going to have a little conversation with you. I'm going to, you know, honor your time by investing a little bit up front.
Yeah, I would rather err on the side of giving away too much information and have it be a game where nobody feels like I pulled one over on them than risk causing a feel bad situation. I'd rather lose a game because I gave away too much information than have three other people feel bad because I didn't properly clue them into what was going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's like fun questions that you can have too. Like, what is the most powerful card? What's your favorite card? Like Matt said, what's your ideal maybe end game look like? Maybe that can paint a broad picture.
Sheldon Mennery has a really good question that he asks people when he plays games like this is, what turn do you expect to win? Yeah. And so saying, you know, oh, this is probably like a turn eight deck. Most of the time, if things go really, really well for me and I have a god hand, I might be able to win on turn six uninterrupted. But that is a really good question because that doesn't tell anybody about the actual cards in it. You're just giving people a timeline of what you're trying to do and how quickly you're trying to do it. That's one question. And I mean, leave to Sheldon to have a good idea about the format, which has never happened before.
Oh, wow.
I'm kidding, obviously. But that's one of my favorite questions to ask is, what turn do you expect to win with this deck?
Yeah, and that holds people accountable, too. If they say a turn and then it goes three turns earlier than what they said, it's kind of like, well, is your deck designed to do that? Is that really a fluke? Like, that's a thing that you can actually...
Did you just tutor up that win condition with a really obscure tutor, which probably implies you have a bunch of tutors in your deck, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Or like, another question that I think might be fun is, like, how comfortable would you feel playing this against a pre-con? Or like, there are just so many different questions that you can ask to situate power. What are you after in this game? Because really, we just can't treat like the categorizations alone as a proxy for having that conversation. It does definitely need to be had. And there are a lot of ways that we can suss out particularly what everyone in the game is looking for. And hopefully we've all got, you know, like-minded things based off of categorizations that don't have numbers in them. Like that's going to be it for me. I don't like the numbers. I think the numbers do a very poor job of aligning our interests in a commander game. So I'm wagging my finger over and over.
Fair.
By and large, my games this weekend were pretty balanced. Everyone had a pretty good understanding of their power level. I didn't really feel like any of the ones I was really in were disbalanced or anything. So people seemed to do a good job with self-evaluation, at least in the games I was in.
And Matt, I think you mentioned that you had actually had a little bit of trouble on that front, if I recall.
Yeah, we did have one. And, you know, we kind of went around the table and we had that conversation and the one person that was a little vague ended up being, their deck within four turns, we could tell their deck was not as advertised.
Sure. And that's also a thing. Like, I suppose any system that we come up with, there's always going to be that possibility. It really is impossible to remove. There is no perfect system. But, you know, I think that this is just a fun conversation to have to hopefully gently improve the current system that is here. And we've got our thoughts on it. But I think also, like, it's would be really cool to hear listener thoughts on it, too. Just finding a simple system that will help folks align their interests in a commander game and, you know, make sure that everyone has the experience that we're all looking for.
And the experience we're looking for is me winning.